football on Off the Ball.
You know, I think you could argue maybe Graham Burke, Jack Byrne, technically right now, are more influential as to what Shamrock Rovers do.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Well, hi there and welcome along to episode 80 of the Racing Pod on Off the Ball with me, Tom Malone, and Johnny Ward is going to join me on the line very, very shortly as well. Remember, we're here every week with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews and crack. The first half of the pod is free to air and the second part is exclusively for members. So be sure to sign up by going to offtheball.com/join this week for members. We'll focus on the action at Royal Ascot next week. And we'll also get Johnny's charity bet. So make sure you subscribe. Johnny, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. Just at your race course today. So something a little bit different and enjoying a really fantastic racetrack. I actually wasn't here since Frankel won when he beat St. Nicholas Abbey. I think you were telling me Frankel was 17 now, so that'd make, 14 years ago. So it's cracking City York. Really, really, like, we have these kind of ideas around, like, you know, maybe British society, and, you know, we have these ideas that, you know, maybe British society has been in, the state of the nation has been in a better state post-Brexit and all that, but you come to York and it's really vibrant, very friendly, great old city, and a cracking racetrack as well.
Yeah, it really is. Are you going to be there for the weekend as well?
No, I'm working at Downpatrick tomorrow. So, I'm back on the plane this evening, looking forward to a couple of days at Downpatrick. There was just a kind of a work-related thing going on here at the track today. And we're in a box that literally is pretty much over the finishing line, but also kind of you're looking head on, you're looking side on, and you're looking over the horse as well. So I'm really looking forward to, actually, like, a lot of people now, I notice at the race, they go to the race and they watch the race on their TV or on their phone, on the TV or whatever, and to see horses in the flesh is actually something that you lose sight of how good it is. And I'll put up maybe on Instagram one or two of the finishes, because it's a magnificent viewpoint of the action there, Dior.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. Looking forward to that. Well, we're just going to cast our minds back a few days before we look ahead to Royal Ascot. And, well, we reflected on the action from Epsom and what you're looking forward to it. And, well, it ended up in a bit of a one-horse race and a one-yard weekend, because Aidan took the three group ones. And, well, Lamborn, he was, he never saw another runner, really, did he, in the Derby?
He didn't, no. I mean, and the Derby was, I suppose, it was built up to be an excellent renewal of the race. Massive field by the standards of the Derby, and we had the Guineas form in terms of ruling court, so we thought, and we had Lamborn, we had Delacroix, we had the line in winter going in there, and we had, a Derby that looked deep enough, I suppose, to reflect the history of the race. It was a funny race. I know there were plenty of you chatting up Lamborn here last week, and I was sort of poo-pooing the fact that Australia, who, despite being a Derby winner, I was like, is Australia going to get a Derby winner at this stage of his life? He's a 10 grand stallion or whatever, and he probably looks like a horse who stays well, but Delacroix, he never got into any rhythm at all. The race was over for him very early. The line in winter, we've seen Aidan O'Brien talking about him going back in trip subsequently, and Lamborn, for me, the story here was kind of Wayne Lorden, to be honest, Tom, was just the fact that, you know, I was at the Curragh when he had that horrible, horrible fall in the Irish Derby. And it looked like, you know, Wayne might never ride horses again after that. And he was probably lucky enough to get out in one piece. But to come back and give such a brilliant tactical ride on a horse who probably isn't the flashiest and isn't the fastest Derby winner, but to get him on the front end without really overexposing him in the early fractions, in the middle fractions of the race. You know, what the Derby kind of means at this stage is hard to weigh up. Like, if Lamborn retired a stud now, I'm not sure he'd be much more expensive than Australia. You know, he's a Derby winner. But what does the Derby mean in terms of your prospects as a stallion going forward? I'm not sure. But Coolmore still loved the race. Aidan O'Brien loves the race. And it was a really, really good performance. You might see him in the Irish Derby. I'm not sure he'd necessarily be a massive draw at the Curragh. But for me, the story of the race was Australia having his first Derby winner, something Dubawi hasn't done. And Wayne Lorden, I thought he was just excellent on the horse. Lovely words from Aidan O'Brien afterwards.
Yeah, that was kind of a majesty. One of the good guys from the weigh room, and I suppose segues nicely into another one of the good guys from the Irish weigh room, getting the promotion that I suppose his talents deserve in Colin Keane in his new role. And he got it off to the best possible start at Newbury yesterday with a winner. It's an exciting time for Colin Keane, isn't it?
Yeah, this is, you know, this happened extraordinarily fast. You had the Kieran Schumark fallout from the Guineas and Field of Gold, who we'll talk about later in the show. And I wasn't expecting this, you know. I wasn't sure, you know, what Colin's overall role was in the Judmont picture. But I suppose it reflects the fact that Ger Lyons, you know, Colin and Kerry, obviously Kerry Lyons are partners, so he's absolutely embedded in that family and in that operation for a long, long time. But, you know, Ger has always been good to let him ride horse. Even if Ger had a 9 or 10 to 1 shot in a race, he'd be happy enough, it seems, to let him ride for Noel Mead in recent years to help him his race for the jockey's title. But I think one thing about Colin Keane, I'm sure you agree, Tom, is he hasn't really ridden in enough big races for a jockey of his standing, and that's the thing. I think he needs to be. Colin's a top rider, but you don't become a top rider in the best races unless you're riding in them relatively regularly, because that's the difference. It's like you know, peak sport is where the margins are so tight for error at the top, and you have to really be part of that regularly to get better at it. And I think Colin is a top class rider, but he needs to be riding at Royal Ascot and every day, as he will be next week. Otherwise he'd barely be riding at Royal Ascot at all. That's just the way it was. You know, he was attached to Ger Lyons yard. Ger has very good horses, but he wouldn't have the money or the firepower to rival Coolmore day in, day out. So this is a reflection of Colin's talents, and he obviously rode Field Gold in to win the Guineas very early after the announcement that he was going to be riding more of the horses. And now we have the announcement that he's the retained rider for Judmonte. It's very, very exciting for him, and it'll make the Jockeys Championship somewhat more interesting here. But I don't think that's comparable. Winning the Jockeys Championship is fine, and you know, it involves a lot of hard yards, but you really need to be, you want to be riding in those big races on Saturdays. Even coming here to York today, you can feel there's a buzz around like British racing on the flat when you have these big meetings that is not comparable at all in Ireland on the flat. And Colin needs to be making the getting the plane over to these meetings more weekends than has been the case. It's going to be very exciting for him.
Yeah, so is that thing about being champion jockey? I suppose once you've done it, and he did it kind of aged, what, 25 or 24, so he did it so early in his career, it's not, I'm sure he'd like to retain it, but you know, I imagine it's been done now, and he's very ambitious. So it's his age as well. He's only 30. So Aidan O'Brien often says that, you know, these riders sort of don't sort of come into their own as proper Group 1 riders, and sort of they're mid-30s. Because like you say, they have to get all that experience in Group 1s and Grade 1s and riding all around the world and just getting used to that. Now, obviously, Colin is a very good... he's a very good temperament. He's a very even-tempered kind of guy. That's very clear. He doesn't get too high when he's up or too low when he's down. But that practice will massively stand to him. And this, you know, if this works out, I mean, he's going to be in this job for quite some time, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't, you know, if you get a job with AMO or something like that, or you get a job with particular other owners, it comes with a bit of a health warning in the sense that, well, we have a history here of, you know, a trigger-happy kind of owner, certainly with trainers, but that's not really the case here. This is an old-style Arab operation, would have been old-school through Khaled Abdullah, and, you know, as much as, you know, this happened from the Kieran Schumark fallout, I don't think Colin has any worries on that score. Like, he ultimately, he's here to do a job, but this should be his job for a long time going forward. And I suppose unless maybe such a thing that Judmont think that they need maybe somebody who's based in Britain more often, but it won't be for lack of ability or anything like that. And Colin will have the best of both worlds at the moment. And just on Aidan's comment, like I spoke to Shamie Heffernan, who felt like he was riding as well as or better than ever in his 50s, like, and I definitely think flat riders can go a long, long way. They can be riding brilliantly in their late 40s, mid-40s, late 40s, even in their 50s. And Colin at 30 is like, it's probably like a goalkeeper in his mid to late 20s.
Yeah, it is. There is a touch of that. It's just that complete condition. And what do you think? I know, I saw Billy Lee's about 5-4 during the week for the Irish Jockeys Championship. I thought, you know, it's a small price to tie up a lot of cash for a long time. But I can see Colin easily relinquishing that title given the demands he'll have. You know, we saw him at Newbury there during the week. He'll be away every Saturday. You know, he'll have to go to France and stuff like that, and the odd Sunday as well. Like, it'd be very difficult, you'd imagine, to retain that Jockeys Championship.
It will, and it does make it more exciting. I think Billy would be the people's champion at this stage, in that he's given it a couple of goes and he's a very popular guy. He's a brilliant rider as well. And It's like Colin having the best of both worlds. At a lower level, Billy has the Paddy Toomey horses. I mean, even this evening in a stakes race, he's a choice between two very good horses trained by Paddy Toomey and Willie McCreary. So he'd be picking up the best of both worlds there. And he's as a freelance rider, as well as that, he's going to have massive support as the title race goes on. Then you look at the likes of Dylan Brown McMonagall. I felt he was going to give it a good go last year. That didn't really materialise. And Dylan is one of these more global riders where he will end up riding in France and in Britain at weekends. But he could be sort of interesting as well. But yeah, you'd have to think Billy will give it a very good go this season. And like, Colin would have to stay in touch because he is going to miss a lot of weekends. And this is the other fallout from this is Gary Carroll, who only had, I think, maybe 7 winners for Gerry Lyons last season from about 45 odd rides. Like, he's going to pick up a lot more first choice rides for Gerry Lyons. And Gary wasn't a million miles off being in the title race a couple of years ago. He's going to really benefit from this as well. So I think there'll be a lot of happy people from this. Colin will be happy, Billy Lee will be happy, and Gary Carroll will be happy, and maybe one or two others as well.
Yeah. James Ryan probably picks up the Gary Carroll rides there within Gerry Lyons as well. It seems like it's going to work out for quite a few people in Ireland anyway. I'm sure the likes of Ross O'Ryan and Oisín Murphy might not see it that way. But let's move on to Royal Ascot, Johnny. It's such a great week, isn't it? I mean, the Tuesday of Royal Ascot, it's almost heresy to say it, but it's easily comparable with the first day of Cheltenham, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know, I have to say, watching Royal Ascot last year, I wasn't at Cheltenham now last year, but Royal Ascot to me had a lot that Cheltenham didn't have. It had a proper kind of global aspect to it. It had exceptionally competitive racing day in, day out, and it felt like there were no filler races, really. Even though you have your share of handicaps and you've a longer meet than Cheltenham, it felt like every race really, really had something going for it. I still haven't actually gone, but it's an excellent event. Like, if you're an event junkie, something to go to. And it's not as kind of la-di-da as maybe you think. It's like, you know, everyone has a place there. You have to dress up, but it's great crack, and it's obviously a lot of fun. It's a day out, and it's going. Obviously, a couple of horses like the Lake Victoria not going over, and Albert Einstein, that's disappointing, but it's going to be a hell of a meet.
Just on that as well, what like when you're, you know, it's a long week as well, not unlike Cheltenham, but any sort of bits and pieces of sort of betting advice you give to people? I personally love to play the Whirlpool, the old place pot, and that tends to have at least a sort of 500-1 sort of dividend every day. But there's what kind of gets your juices going? Because like you said, there's lots of competitive handicaps too.
Yeah, I met a guy here last night who got the pick six up in Hove yesterday, right? So he figured that there was a rollover, and but he had to do the pick six at Hove dogs, you have to actually go to Hove. You have to go to the track. So he got a lady friend to go to the track, dropped her a few quid, she put the money into the pick six for him, and it copped.
Hove is down, like, where was he travelling from? Hove is down near Brighton, isn't it?
Beside Brighton, yeah. Mm-hmm. So needs must, you know, have bet will travel or whatever, or give it to a lady who'll travel anyway, or lives in Hove in this instance. So she goes down to, and she's like, I'm not sure I want to walk home from the racetrack with all this money on me, and I kind of want to stop for a pizza on the way home. What are we going to do here? But he basically found this little opportunity from the rollover. And it got me thinking, like, we forgot about all these like great rollovers used to have on the tote. And you mentioned the Whirlpool. Like, I've just come from a meeting here with head by the RNG staff, and they're on about the Whirlpool. And the Whirlpool is primarily Hong Kong people betting, but Hong Kong people bet, like, they bet, and they bet into the pool. That's how they bet over there, and it's a great opportunity to look at, like, the place pot. It's not a bet that people do enough, like, for events like Cheltenham, and particularly Royal Ascot. There's enough money there to justify it. It's a great fun bet, really difficult handicaps, a great fun bet to play your different perms across the different races, and the place pot is a great bet. And ultimately, you know, the normal stuff as well, Tom, just bet sensibly. Don't go chasing your losses. It's a long week and all of that. And I do find Royal Ascot meet that I wouldn't have to have a bet every day or any day at times. I'd really just enjoy the action, but definitely look out for the Whirlpool options.
And any particular horses, just sort of before we go through that, any of those races in depth, but there are any horses you just thought, oh, I'm really looking forward to this guy for next week?
Albert Einstein, but you know, you give up Charles Darwin when he was running in Navan, you said he was a good thing, and I wasn't so sure based on his performance first time out, but he was very good. Then he's a beautiful pedigree, and he's going to be interested in Coventry. I am looking forward to seeing Field of Gold. I think he might be a bit short, to be honest. We'll talk about St James Palace Stakes, but the Gold Cup as well. I think the Gold Cup is kind of more intrigue, you know.
Yeah, no Kyprios. Like, it's sort of been shaken up, and we don't know if Illinois truly gets that trip.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there was the, when Homer faked his own death in The Simpsons, Marge's sisters had a gravestone which said, "We are richer for having lost him." And there is a sense in this race that Kyprios not being in the race makes it richer in some respects, because we could see Kyprios try to go down like the Yates route and win it again and so on. But like, as you say now, you have really interesting horse coming in, unproven in terms of stamina. And there will be long shots in that race with more stamina kind of in their page and record that will become interesting. And just on Kyprios, like, it's great that he is able to go out in one piece again, because he's had such a checkered career in terms of his health. But I do feel he's been taken out of the race, makes it very interesting.
Yeah, it usually does, doesn't it? It usually does. You know, it's probably a loss for fans and maybe marking the race. But I suppose of all the places you don't really need to hang a day's racing on a single horse, is probably Gold Cup Day at Royal Ascot, to be fair. Just quick thoughts on the Saturday action. You and Absurd are at York. He'll be there tomorrow for the Road to the Ebor Listed Stakes. I assume that's sort of a, as the race suggests, a sort of a stepping stone towards maybe trying to land that, because Absurd's a funny kind of horse. Mile 6 really seems to be his trip. I'm not sure he truly gets further on the level.
Yeah, he is. He is that. I think the first time I backed him was at Royal Ascot when he was second to Vauban, and he actually, Frankie Dettori rode him that day, and he looked like he could become a proper Melbourne Cup contender. And maybe that's kind of been, I think that's one of William Mullen's remaining ambitions as a trainer, is to win the race. But I actually think Absurd is short enough here. Just looking at, we'll speak to our Hills ambassador later on, but 13-8 is the top price. I could see why Hills are taking him on. Like, Al Karim beat him as Chester. Now, he's slightly better off at the weights here, Absurd, relative to him. But Al Saqib, for me, on form, would have every chance, if there's a bit of a pace in the race, of potentially you know, beating Absurd, who for me looks short enough. I find him a hard horse to get right, to be honest. And this might be his ideal trip. For a horse rate 109, it's very rare to see a horse rate 109 run regularly over hurdles. So he's a fairly unconventional kind of training routine. But El Cordobes as well is definitely not out of it. He's only four and he's on the up. So I feel he's a bit vulnerable here, and it's interesting he'll be ridden by Danny Tudhope, who actually won on him at Chester, since which time he's been ridden by Kieran McAvoy, Danny Mullins, Harry Cobden and William Buick and Colin Keane before that. So he knows many different riders.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite the list of riders, to be fair. A quick word on the Scurry at Sandown as well. Obviously, this, you're just going to wear the listed race just in the shadow of Royal Ascot. Like, you know, it's a bit like races the week before Cheltenham, isn't it? The fellas here, you're just thinking, oh, they might be able to nab a bit of black type or something, or here's an opportunity to win something. The near side of Royal Ascot, maybe Star Mamas might fall into that category a little bit, that three-year-old filly chance here for her in the Scurry.
I'd be inclined to back Town and Country again. Like, I wouldn't be following British sprinting day in, day out around that. But like, Town and Country, trained by Henry de Bromhead, Colin Keane takes the ride. Her run, she was 33s for a reason, because she went into that stakes race at Cork the last day, the Polonia Stakes, rated 87, which gave her, went into a stakes race rated 87, even as a three-year-old, would give you plenty to find. It was a typical Billy Lee ride that day, Bugsy. She was held up and he sort of nursed her into the race. Sometimes I think horses can be a bit flattered when they're ridden like that. There can be a bit of a pace collapse. But ultimately, she beat Babouche very readily. And First Instinct, the 98 rated winner, was well fancied for Willie Haggis. And she was closing all the way to the line. She really, really stayed on well from the furlong pole to the end of the line. And she is, at her price here, she's fours with Hills, so I'd be inclined to have a couple of quid in her each way. I think it's interesting Henry de Bromhead, who's obviously not associated with sprinters, comes over here with her, but she's definitely on the up, and taking on her own age group here, she has a chance.
Anything else for you on the Irish cards over the weekend? As you mentioned, you're going to be trekking to Dunpatrick from York this afternoon, so is there anything there that'll make it worthwhile?
Downpatrick is relatively tricky over the 2 days. It's fairly low grade jump stuff. Sunday be the better of the two cards. It's not bad action at Gorn, Bugsy. The first maiden, it's interesting to see Daytona for Jack Cleary and Aidan O'Brien. Jack Cleary is picking up some very good rides for Aidan O'Brien. You see all of these Wooten Bassett horses appearing, and he is one of them. The race that kind of interested me was later on in the card, if I can get it up here. There's this conditions race later on, six-runner race to close the card. Corridor, Crystal Clear, Fleur de Chine, Dingham, Eastwatch, and Viking Invasion. Very interesting how Eastwatch goes here, because I think I was at Gorn the day he won over course and distance. He absolutely hacked up on that occasion. He'd run well first time out. He was well back. There was plenty of chat about him, sort of make believe, so locally kind of bred after his Tipperary run. And he was backed into 11 to 10. He won by 9 lengths that day in April, earlier on in the season. And what was interesting that day was it was yielding ground. And maybe he's kind of wants yielding ground. And he did disappoint at Leopardstown the last time. But going back to Gorham, which is a kind of a unique track, he should take a bit of beating on that early run.
Good stuff. Well, this is the Racing Pod on Off the Ball. If you listen to the free version of the podcast, we'll be leaving you here. But if you're looking for more, including our look at all that action next week at Royal Ascot and Johnny's charity bet, go to offtheball.com/join to subscribe and get the full podcast with all our racing tips, insight and stories from the week's action. Well, welcome along to the members section of the Racing Pod here on Off the Ball. I'm Tom Malone, joined once again by Johnny Ward and also Dave Kellner of William Hill. Dave, we're really looking forward to it. It's Royal Ascot week. I mean, you know, in there in the trading rooms, it's a different kind of vibe. Even here, you're sort of 4 or 5 days out. All these sort of entries are filtering through. We don't have the decks as yet, obviously, but the market's starting to take shape. And it's a good old spot when you're working for a bookmaker this time of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a real buzz about it, Tom. Like, it's one of those weeks where you've got so many high-quality group races, 8 group ones across 5 days. You've got those fiendishly competitive handicaps as well, where we'll have buzz horses. And, yeah, I'm just fascinated to see how the week progresses, really, and whether we have lots of short-price winning favourites or whether we get some of those hot pots beaten. And obviously I'll be intrigued to see how Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore go across the week, because they've dominated the early part of the season. You'd expect that to continue throughout Royal Ascot as well. So it's just a fascinating week with William Hill. We've got a bet and get offer across Royal Ascot as well. So if you have a bet, you'll get a free bet on us. You can check that out at williamhill.com and on the app. But Tommy, yeah, it just promises to be such a fascinating week of racing. I cannot wait personally.
The one thing for me, it's totally different from Cheltenham in that you don't get those kind of anti-post short price sort of multis like you kind of do in Cheltenham, which I think it's worse for because of it. But what kind of horses are you sort of afraid of, and what kind of liabilities you've picked up so far? Look, obviously the likes of Albert Einstein and Lake Victoria not running is probably a help for you guys, but anything else you're just wary of laying over the next few days?
Yeah, definitely. Those two in particular you just mentioned, obviously, is a massive bonus for William Hill that they've not made the gig. And as you mentioned, it's not got that same sort of anti-post feel as Cheltenham does. There's not the same sort of build-up. You'll see more heavy turnover on the day of the race. There's a couple I just want to highlight as market movers on day one in particular. Gestad is a real mover in the Coventry Stakes, 8-1 from 12-1 with William Hill. And Enfajar in the Wolferton is a market mover as well, 4-1 from 6-1. And the one that we think is going to be a bad result on day one in the Queen Anne Stakes is Rosalian. The punters have come for that. It's 11-4 Rosalian. Expect to reverse that form as far as the betting fraternity are concerned, with the winner on that occasion, Lead Artist, in the Lockinge. But we want to keep Sardinian Warrior on side at 7-1. It's been a real buzz about this horse in the last 24 hours. And our trading team fancy Sardinian Warrior in the Queen Anne Stakes. So that one's rock solid at 7-1, and one we're looking to keep on side with William Hill as well. But we expect Rosalian to be a really bad result on day one.
We may as well start there, Johnny. What about the Queen Anne? It's around about what, 11-4 Rosalian, and then Dancing Gemini, Lead Artist. Obviously, the 1-2-3 and the Lockinge are sort of reverse market order for this. What do you make of the Queen Anne?
this is a cracking renewal, and that form is it's, you know, you're not really sure if it'll hold up, because, you know, you'd have to say going into that race, it was hard to know exactly what Rosalind we were going to get. First run since June of last year, and Rosalind was sent off 9-4, and I remember forecasting that race in Newbury, thinking that Notable Speech was the value and putting Notable Speech into an each way double for the charity bet. And of course, he finished fourth. What Notable Speech does will be very, very interesting. You know, he had been off the track since November, so the market suggested he would come on a little bit from the run. This time last year, he came into Royal Ascot and bombed out behind Rosalian after being so impressive in the Guineas. So it's kind of hard to know what to expect from him entirely. But I do feel with Charlie Appleby's horse in such good form, Notable Speech should come on a bit from Newbury, and he might be the value for me just looking each way. Hills are top price 11-2. He's still a horse, I think, as much as he hasn't necessarily totally gone on from his shock win in the Guineas, he's still a horse with a lot of ability, and he was far from disgrace in the lock-ins. Like, he was a little bit fresh, you know, his run kind of petered out a little bit, and for me he's the value at the prices. Rosalian was he was very, very good, and he beat Henry Longfellow as a three-year-old in the St. James Palace last year. But, you know, he's obviously had a difficult enough time since we only saw him in the lock engine. I'd have them closer together in the betting. I'm still not giving up a Notable Speech.
That's fair enough. On to the Coventry. Dave, is it Postmodern at the top of the market? You mentioned that money for Gestad, and that is a horse that Aidan O'Brien regularly mentions. Just, he seemed to be kind of one of those slightly forgotten two-year-olds. Everyone was talking about Charles Darwin and Albert Einstein so much, and he always just kind of added his name in the mix when they were doing some previews. But is it Postmodern still top of the market for William Hill?
Yeah, it is. Postmodern just shading favouritism at 7-2. Military Code is in there at 5-1. Warsaw is 8-1. Gestad is 8-1 as well. Charles Darwin 8-1. 14-1. Naval Light, Flushing Meadows, Underwriter, Brussels, Powder Blue, and it's 16-1 and bigger the remainder. I think if Underwriter was to running this race, he'd be interesting on the back of that debut performance when beating Kanishka, but it may be likely to swerve the Coventry. I'm not sure what the plans are for Underwriter, but it is Postmodern at the top of the betting at 7-2. But as I mentioned, that money for Gestad is very, very interesting in the lead up to this race. On the back of that performance on debut at Navan over the 6 furlongs, Gestad's the market mover at 8-1, but I'll be fascinated to see when the decks come out for this race, how the market shapes up.
Early in the show, Johnny, you did mention the international element to it. And obviously, if Wathan have two here, they've said that they will use James McDonald, the Kiwi-born Aussie-based and Hong Kong rider, as their second jockey. So that just adds just another layer of intrigue, all these international riders coming over. But what do you like in the Coventry?
Massively so. Like, it's definitely one of my favourite races of the year, full stop. You know, you have 2 year old very, very early in their life, and fairly early in their own 2 year old campaign, rocking up here, and often after having, you know, won relatively recently. And that's what Warsaw falls, what bracket he falls into here. He has a smashing pedigree. He's by Wooden Bassett, and he's out of a Galileo bred mare. So really, there's a lot of stamina there. But at Navan, I was really intrigued with the market at Navan, because Kansas was sent off 8-11 under Billy Lee. It was one of these days when Aidan had his obviously top riders elsewhere. But Jack Cleary picked up the ride in Warsaw, 22s into 18, but he really won like a horse that had plenty of ability. And for me, that was a fascinating performance. If he rocks up here, I think that's a sign of intent. Stepping up 6 furlongs will absolutely suit him. He looks a horse of loads of ability. Aidan has been extolling Wooden Bassett. And the problem to having a bet here is I would personally advise listeners to wait till Sunday for decoration time. It's just too hard to know at this stage what runs, but I'd be definitely sticking with Warsaw if he does.
Yeah, I'll be looking to play a few Carl Burke big price runners in my play spot that I mentioned earlier on as well. Right, the third race of the day, it's now called the King Charles III Stakes course, formerly the King's Stand. Believing is up near the top of the market here, Dave. Do you think she's a kind of fav who might help you out, or do you think there might be a bit of movement around her? I know she brings form to the race, but she gets beaten a lot.
Yeah, I think she might be one of the more, it's obviously a wide open race, but she might be one of the more vulnerable favourites of the week, if she does go off favourite for the race, that is. She's 9-2 currently with William Hill. Asphora is 11-2. Regional in the betting at 7-1. Night Raider is 8-1. Starlust is 12s along with Stormboy. Magira is 12-1. 16-1 American Affair and Flora of Bermuda. And it's 20-1 and bigger the remainder. The two I'd maybe look to focus on here, again, Dex dependent. Night Raider, I think, as you mentioned, I think he'll go well for Carl Burke. Was beaten by Ines Sherin on his most recent start in the Duke of York Clipper Stakes, that Group 2 contest. But I expect him to improve for that run. And I do like the mare in the race, Magira, if she takes her chance. I think she's improved considerably since switching to Ed Walker with those two wins at Longchamp and Haydock. And I just like following fillies and mares in form, and she's clearly one of those. If she takes on this test, I think she'll be suited by it, and she's available at 12-1 with William Hill. No real massive changes in the market anti-post for this race, with Believing at the top of the betting at 9-2. But yeah, I'd keep my eye on Night Raider 8-1 and Magira, who I like at 12-1.
Not sure about your betting, Dave, but we definitely sorted your Tinder profile anyway. Likes following fillies in form. What about you, Johnny? What do you like in the King's Stand or King Charles III Stakes as it is now?
Get back to us next week, Dave. Let us know how you get on. I'm following fillies in form. I'm going to follow Regional here, second Asphora in what was the King Charles at the Third Stakes last year. And Ed Bettel's horse, that was a very interesting race in the sense that Regional kind of came from behind, was quite well backed, warmed up for this behind Believing at Maidan. Very, very competitive race, Tom. We have to kind of figure out where the draw bias is, if any, on the day. But Regional is a really, really solid. He's a seven-year-old. He's as solid as the day is long. Just give a mention to one as well at a big, big price. And we mentioned earlier on in the show, Ger Lines, and, you know, the standard of the horse that he'll have now, and not having Colin Keane. But Magnum Force was the winner at the Breeders' Cup, the Juvenile and Sprint last year. Now, he's only a three-year-old, so it's a tough challenge. But I'd say he's running an ace behind Buccaneer Ferte. He had a cut in his lip after that race. I'd say he's way, way better than that. He'd be about 33-1, 40-1. Don't rule him out if he makes the boat over.
Yeah, I thought Buccaneer Ferte wasn't without a squeak either, to be perfectly honest, at a double figure price, given how well he bounced back. And obviously, look, you're always wary of these horses if they attempt a stallion career and then come back to racing. But he seemed to have his mind on the job, as you mentioned, the last day at Nace. The next Group 1 on the card at Ascot in day 1 is the St James's Palace. We have this clash of the guineas, where you got the English, the Irish and the French 2000 guineas winners amongst others, but the shortest price favourite on the day, shortest price favourite of the week, is he Field of Gold, Dave?
Yeah, he is. This is one to get the juices flowing, isn't it, this one? This is a titanic clash. Hopefully all three will stand their ground and we'll get what we want to see. Field of Gold, Ruling Court and Henri Matisse going head-to-head. Field of Gold, very, very strong. 5-6 in the market. Ruling Court is 11-4. Henri Matisse in the betting at 4-1. Of course, loads spoken about Field of Gold and whether he should have won the 2,000 guineas at Newmarket or not. And he's expected, clearly, as far as the market is concerned, to reverse that form with Ruling Court, who skipped the Derby to come and after the St James's Palace Stakes on what will be better ground, you'd imagine. Field of Gold, though, I just think a lot of people are looking at that form that ties in with Henri Matisse and thinking that Henri Matisse only has a small margin to make up with Field of Gold to reverse that form. But I think Field of Gold is a much better horse this season. I think he'll win, and I think he'll win well. I just think he's going to prove that he should have won the 2,000 guineas. He was so impressive in the Irish 2,000 guineas, and I expect him to win. I expect him to beat Henri Matisse, and I expect him to beat Ruling Court. And I think it's probably the right sort of price, isn't it? You might not want to go in at any shorter than 5-6. I wonder whether they'll dangle even money on the day. But yeah, he's been strong in the betting, and I expect him to win.
You feel like, David, you know, it is one of those ones, you know, when you're doing your marketing first thing on Tuesday morning, you think, well, we have all week to get it back. Surely we can't not get it back all week long. And maybe on Tuesday morning, you get a bigger price about Field of Gold. Johnny, if they gave you even money about Field of Gold, would you take it? Or you'd be looking for something a little bit juicier?
Well, I'll put it to you, Bugsy. Could there be a sting in the tail if you back Field of Gold? You haven't that one. I think he's too short, to be quite honest. He was very, very good at the Curra. I put up Officer. It was one of these races kind of head in hands. Like, why am I not putting up Field of Gold just to win the Guineas? Officer was 10-1 with Hill, so I thought that was too big. He did go off 9-2, but he ran more like a horse that did have plenty to find, which he did. Field of Gold was very good in the day, but I'm just not convinced. If I watch that race at Newmarket back 100 times, I'm still not convinced he's going to be ruling court. It cost Kieran Schumacher his job, effectively. It wasn't the best ride in the world, but ruling court was exceptional on the day. He's by justify, so he should be staying further. They give it out of a high chaparral mare. They gave it a shot at the Derby. He ended up not running there. I'm intrigued as to how you train a horse to run in the Derby essentially last weekend over a mile and a half and then get him back to being a miler on Tuesday at Royal Ascot. But he was an exceptional breezer. He was a very, very good two-year-old, and his form in the Guineas for me, I don't think there was as much of a fluke about that. He was a 9-2 chance. He was well fancied in the Guineas. He was excellent on the day, and he for me at 11-4 with Hills, I cannot get the price difference between him and Field of Gold. Field of Gold was very good at the Curra, yes, but I'm not sure what he beats. He beats a bunch of horses maybe that he hadn't necessarily met before, but now taking on the real proper Guineas form, I can't see why he's so short. Big day for Colin Keane. This can't wait for the race.
Yeah, it's going to be an absolutely cracking reel. We'll move on to Wednesday and we'll just pick up the Gold Cup later on as well. But the Prince of Wales, it's obviously one of the absolute highlights of the entire week. Goes to post at 4:20. How do you bet here, Dave?
I couldn't bet in for this race. Los Angeles is 9-4 favourite. Ann Martin, the betting at 7-2. Map of Stars is 9-2. Ombudsman in the betting at 11-2. See the Fire is 7-1. White Birch, 8-1. Factor Cheval is 12-1. 66-1. Bar those, Los Angeles at the top of the betting at 9-4 for the Prince of Wales Estates. I came on this racing podcast a few weeks back, and we thought that he would win the Tattersall's Gold Cup. He's a little bit of a lazy individual, and maybe doesn't always show his best at home. But there's no doubt he's talented, and having beaten White Birch at the Curra two starts back, won again, beating Ann Martin at Tattersall's Gold Cup, and yeah, he's 9-4 and he's at the top of the betting. I expect him to confirm that form with Anmart.
Yeah, Anmart. Anmart is a significantly shorter price than he was at the Curra as well. Maybe he'll strip a bit fitter for that run too. Johnny, what do you make of this? Oh, it's an absolutely brilliant renewal. Colin Keane back on White Birch. I know he didn't have the greatest run behind Los Angeles, but I don't know if there was enough interference or closed doors to suggest he would actually beat Los Angeles. Well, what do you make of it?
I do wonder about him running Bugsy, to be honest. Just looking at it, it's going to be hot in Ascot this week.
Yeah,
the start of the summer, and they can kind of water away, but there's a little bit of rain forecast between now and sort of Wednesday. But looking at the Berkshire forecast this morning in general, it's going to be pretty hot. So it's going to, I'd be very surprised if it weren't sort of good to firm ground here. So for me, there's an angle into this race, and it might be back in Los Angeles, He's a very, very sort of good...
underappreciated, I think.
Maybe he is. Like, I mean, it's the fact that after he won at York last year, he was beaten three times. And even when he won, I suppose, when he won the Irish Derby, he was sort of workmanlike. And after the Irish Derby, they were talking about, oh, this is a stare. And in fairness, Aidan O'Brien said, no, I don't see that. So he's been absolutely right. And he's a very good-looking horse. He's gotten better with racing and getting it into the heat of combat. But for me, there's a very clear bet here in the shape of, I'm just looking at the Hills prices here. Ombudsman, best price. Yeah, Dave has said 11-2. I think that's a rock solid bet each way. Like, he's a very, very unexposed horse. I think he'll be trained absolutely for this race. His second run of the season. Fair enough, he's beaten at Sandown, but that'll be fine. He should be coming here in perfect shape. This race for me is not going to have the 10 runners it has at this stage. I think there will be defections. And as much as I like Los Angeles, and you might remember last year, we had a very good performance from August Rodan in the race. I think he'll be ridden. August Rodan was ridden forward. I think Los Angeles will be ridden quite similar to him. But to me, there's a good each way angle in this race. So there has to be major doubt about White Birch running on what for me will be good firm ground at this stage.
Yeah, good stuff. We'll just finish up on the Gold Cup then. Of course, one of the feature races of the entire week. And we mentioned earlier, no Kiprios. So Illinois, has he been popular, Dave?
He's been kind of popular in the market. There's not that much movement in this market at the moment, Tom. 13 to 8 is Illinois. Candelari is 11 to 4. Trawlerman in the betting at 7 to 2. Sweet William, 6 to 1. Jan Brueghel is 8 to 1. 25 to 1 bar. It'll be intriguing again to see the final decks for this race, but Illinois is 13 to 8. I'd personally expect him to be reasonably popular come race time in the Ascot Gold Cup, Illinois. I can see him being popular for the race. But yeah. 13 to 8, is it enough to tempt runners in on the back of that performance when beating Al-Karim in the Ormond Stakes, potentially? 13 to 8, maybe a little bit on the skinny side for a horse that hasn't won in Group 1 company yet.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. And I suppose he's only really been sort of promoted recently to the senior team, Johnny Hasney, here, Illinois, in the wake of poor old Kyprios having to call it a day.
Yeah, and, you know, Aidan O'Brien just has such a phenomenal record in this race. I think he kind of instinctively, like, he doesn't really get it wrong in this race. He normally has a very good stare, but let's be honest, like, effectively, no Gold Cup horse is bred for the Gold Cup. So you have to go on your feel and what the horse feels like to you. Aidan O'Brien has had plenty of Galileo breds kind of in recent years who are more staying types, but they haven't necessarily gone down this route because he just didn't need to because Kyprios was there. He's now gone down this route. He was very, very good three-year-old. That Ledger performance when he split Jan Brueghel and Darren Mile, like, it was a great race to watch. There were some, even Grosvenor Square in fifth was a very, very good horse. To me, he looks the right type for the race. He's just too short, though. I can't be putting him forward at 6-4 on the bits. Like, how is he so short based on what he's achieved? And you look at last year's renewal of the race where you've the second and third run, and again, Trawlerman might have the race kind of to himself. Sweet William will, again, absolutely have been trained for this race. He does stay, and he's an each-way price. For me, he's more solid. As much as Illinois is kind of the new kid on the block, he's way too short for what he's achieved for me.
Yeah, that's very fair. That's very fair. Right, Johnny, well, you do have a charity bet. I absolutely welched last week and took something that was way too short, trying to be clever. I was not clever. That was subsequently beaten. You now, Johnny Ward, have a charity bet to restore some pride to the pod. What are you backing?
No, well, I actually put up on Instagram this week. I was trawling through Trawlerman, my old stuff in my house, and I found everything from old Valentine's cards to the day I went through the card at Nace. Now, that was a long time ago. The one day I went through the card, I think it was like 2009, maybe 2008, 2009. And it feels like it was the last good day I had, Bugsy. You know, it's been a tricky year so far. So you may say restore some pride. I think you've been doing really, really well. You've been tipping good price winners and very, very bullish selections as well. Last week, maybe you got it wrong. My selection in the race was also beaten, to be fair. I am with Ruling Court at 11-4. I absolutely love this race. For me, it's all about the price here. I don't see the Guineas and see he's, Field of Gold, he'll definitely reverse form. I just don't see it. I love Field of Gold as a horse, but he's a little bit tricky at times as well. Ruling Court is really straightforward. He'll be rattling home. And is this a race where Colin Keane is going to have to bite his luck? He rode him at the Curragh as if just keep him out of jail. He's the best horse in the race. This is a different test. How is he going to ride him? Ascot can be a little bit tricky. Can't wait for it. But Ruling Court for me at 11-0 is my selection for the charity bet.
Great stuff. That was episode 80 of the Racing Pod. The Racing Pod, rather. Thank you, Johnny Ward. Thank you, Dave Callner. And thank you. We'll be back again next week. We'll be reflecting a little bit on Royal Ascot.
The Racing Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.